Young Waxillium, age 12, looked from one coin to the other. Both bore a picture of the Lord Mistborn on the front, standing with his left arm outspread toward the Ellendel Basin. On the back, each displayed a picture of the First Central Bank, in which his family owned a large stake.
Well?
Edwern had a stern face and perfect hair. He wore his suit like he'd been born in it, and to him it was a uniform of war. The youthful Waxillium looked from one to the other.
It is understandable you can't spot the difference. It takes an expert, which is why so few of these have been discovered. More may actually be in circulation, we can't know how many. One of those is an ordinary coin. The other has a very special defect.
The carriage continued through the streets as Waxillium studied the coins. Then he unfocused his eyes. It was a trick he'd been taught by a friend at a party recently, used for making two drawings spring to life by overlapping them. Eyes unfocused, coins before him, he crossed his eyes intentionally and let the images of the two coins overlap one another. When they locked into place, the element of the picture that wasn't the same, one of the pillars on the bank building, fuzzed as his eyes were unable to focus on that point.
The mistake happened because a defective coin striker was used. One worker at the mint brought home a pocketful of these curiosities, which were never supposed to enter circulation. You won't be able to see it, but the error...
It's the pillars! On the right side of the bank picture! They are spaced too closely.
Yes. How did you know that? Who told you?
I saw it.
Waxillium handed the coins back.
Nonsense. Your lie is not a believable one, but I can respect your attempt at hiding your source.
Edwern held up one of the coins.
This is the most valuable defective coin in Ellendel history. It's worth as much as a small house. Studying it taught me something important.
That rich people are foolish? They'll pay more money for a coin than it's worth?
All people are foolish, just in different ways. That lesson I learned elsewhere. No, this coin showed me a harsh but invaluable truth. Money is meaningless.
What?
Only expectation has value as currency, Waxillium. This coin is worth more than the others because people think it is. They expect it to be. The most important things in the world are worth only what people will pay for them. If you can raise someone's expectation, if you can make them need something, that is the source of wealth. Owning things of value is secondary to creating things of value where none once existed.
Outside the carriage, an intimidating flight of stone steps led up to the very bank pictured on the coin. Uncle Edwern waited for the coachman to open his door, but Waxillium hopped down on his own. Uncle Edwern met him on the steps.
Your father is hopeless with economics. I've worked with him for many years, but he cannot or will not learn. I have great expectations of you, Waxillium. Banking is not your only option for serving your house. However, after today, I suspect you will recognize it as the best one.
I'm not going to be a banker.
Edwern and Waxillium started up the steps.
Oh? You have your eye on administering the Teamsters, after all?
No! I'm going to be a hero.
His uncle chose not to reply immediately as they approached the top of the steps.
You are 12 years old, and you still speak of this. I expect such foolishness from your sister, but your father should have beaten it out of you by now.
Waxillium turned defiant eyes up at his uncle.
The day of heroes has passed. The stories of people breaking out of history belong to another world. We have reached an era of modernism, both louder and more silent at the same time. You watch. Where once kings and warriors shaped the world, now quiet men in offices will do the same. And do it far, far more effectively.
They entered the bank lobby, which had a low ceiling and a wall of cage-like bars with hunched-over people inside, who received or dispersed cash from or to those who waited in lines. Waxillium's uncle led him around to the back. The dark wood furnishings and mold-colored rug made it feel like dusk in the room, even with windows open and gas lamps burning.
There are two appointments today I wanted you to observe.
They entered a long, unadorned room. The chairs faced the wall. This was a viewing room, a place to spy upon meetings in the bank. His uncle gestured for him to sit, then pulled aside a panel in the wall, revealing a glass slit that let them see the two people in the next room. One was a male banker in a vest and slacks. He sat at an imposing desk, speaking with a middle-aged man in dusty clothing, holding a felt cap in his fingers. The banker looked down his nose at the man, then riffled through papers. Uncle Edwin closed the slit, surprising Waxillium with the abrupt motion. His uncle rose and Waxillium followed, moving to another set of chairs along the same wall. A second spy slit let them look in on another room similar to the first. A female banker in vest and skirt sat behind a similarly intimidating desk. The patron, however, was tall, clean, and relaxed.
Are you certain you need another boat, Lord Nicolin?
Of course I'm certain. Why would I bother coming here if I weren't serious, honestly? You people should allow my steward to make these arrangements. That's what stewards are for, after all.
Uncle Edwin closed the slit, then turned to Waxillium.
You are watching a revolution.
A revolution?
Waxillium had studied banking. Well, he'd been forced to study it by his tutors.
This sounds like what happens every day at a bank.
Ah, you know all this already. And to which of these men will we give a loan?
The rich one. Assuming he's not lying or acting somehow.
No. Nicolin is legitimately wealthy. He has banked with us numerous times in the past, and he never misses his payments.
So you'll loan money to him and not the other?
Wrong. We'll lend to both.
You'll use the good credit of the rich man to underwrite the risk of helping the poor man?
Your tutors have been diligent.
Waxillium shrugged, but inwardly he found himself growing interested. Perhaps this was a way to become a hero. Maybe Uncle Edwin was right, and the frontier was shrinking, the need for men of action vanishing. Maybe this new world wasn't at all like the one that the Ascendant Warrior and the Survivor had lived in. Waxillium could carefully balance risks and give money to those who needed it. If men in suits would someday run the world, couldn't they also make it a better place?
Your assessment is correct on one hand, but flawed on the other. Yes, we will lend to the poor man, but we will not accept risk to do so.
But...
The papers our banker is now presenting will tie the laborer in debt that is impossible to escape. If he fails to meet payments, his signature on that paper will allow us to go directly to his employer and take a percentage of his wages. If that isn't enough, we can do the same for his sons. The rich man has banked with us many times, and his house negotiated favorable terms. We will earn barely 3% on what we lend him. But the laborer is desperate, and no other bank will consider him. He'll pay us 12%. The other banks don't see it yet. They lend safely, and safely only. They have not changed as the world has. Workers earn more now than they ever did, and they're hungry to pay for things once outside their reach. In the last 6 months, we have pushed aggressively to lend to the common people of the city. They flock to us, and will soon make us very, very wealthy.
You'll make slaves of them!
His uncle took out the error coin and set it on the counter beside Waxillium.
The coin is a mistake, an embarrassment. Now it is worth more than thousands of its companions combined. Value created where none once existed. I will take the poor of this city and make of them the same thing. As I said, a revolution.
Waxillium felt sick.
The coin is for you. I wish it to be a reminder. The gift that will...
Waxillium snatched the coin off the counter, then bolted out the door.
Waxillium!
The bank was a labyrinth, but Waxillium found his way. He burst into the small room where the poor man sat in consultation with the loan officer. The laborer looked up from the stack of papers. He'd be barely literate. He wouldn't even know what he was signing. Waxillium set the coin down on the desk before him.
This is a misprinted coin, something that collectors covet. Take it, sell it at a curiosity shop. Don't take less than $2,000 for it, and use the money to move your family out of the slum. Don't sign those documents. They'll be like a chain around your neck.
Wax paused in his story. He held the coin in front of him, studying it as he and Steris rode in the carriage toward the party.
Well, what did your uncle do?
He was livid, of course. The laborer signed the papers. He couldn't believe that I'd actually give him something so valuable. My uncle came in, wove lies in the air like pretty puffs of colored smoke, and got his documents.
Wax turned the coin over, looking at the image of the Lord Mistborn pressed into the front.
The laborer, his name was Jendel. killed himself by jumping off a bridge 8 years later. His sons are still in debt to the bank, though House Ladrian no longer owns an interest in the First Central Bank. My uncle sold it off for capital before gutting the house and faking his death.
I'm sorry.
It's part of what drove me away. Events like that, and what happened in the village, of course. I told myself I was setting out to find adventure. I never intended to be a lawman. I think I knew, deep down, that I couldn't change anything in Ellendale. It was too big, the men in suits too crafty. Out in the roughs, one man with a gun meant something. Here, it's hard to see him as anything other than a relic.
Steris pursed her lips and obviously didn't know what to say. Wax didn't blame her. He'd thought often of the events in that bank, and he still didn't know what, if anything, he could have done differently. He flipped the coin over in his fingers. Scratched into the back in tiny letters were the words, "Why did you leave, Wax?"
How did Bleeder get the coin?
I can't fathom. I sold it before going to the roughs. My father had cut me off by then, and I needed money to outfit myself for the trip.
And those words?
I don't know.
Wax pocketed the coin.
Thing is, remembering that story bothers me. I told myself at the time that I was trying to help the man, but I don't think that was true. Looking back, I was just trying to anger my uncle. I'm still like that, Steris. Why did I leave for the roughs? I wanted to be a hero. I wanted to be seen and known. I could have done a great deal of good by taking a position in my house here in Ellendale, but I'd have had to do it quietly. Leaving, then eventually trying to make a name for myself as a lawman was ultimately selfish. Even joining the constables here sometimes seems like an act of insufferable hubris to me.
I doubt that you care, but I consider your motives to be irrelevant. You save lives. You saved my life. My gratitude is not influenced by what was running through your head as you did so.
Wax met her eyes. Steris was prone to this, startling moments of pure honesty where she stripped everything away and laid herself bare. Steris's eyes flicked toward the window.
We have arrived, but it will take us time to get in. There are many carriages in front of us.
I guess we'll be late.
This is the first party in the space atop the tower.
Steris took a small planning notebook out of her handbag.
And the coach attendants aren't accustomed to this heavy traffic.
You accounted for this delay, didn't you?
Steris stopped on a page in her notebook, then turned it around. There, in her neat handwriting, was a detailed agenda for their evening at the party. The third entry read, 8:17. Way into the building, likely blocked by traffic. Lord Waxillium carries us up to the top floor by allomancy, which is completely inappropriate and at the same time breathtaking. He raised an eyebrow, checking his pocket watch, which he carried in his gun belt, not his vest, to be easily dropped with his other metals.
It's 8:13. You're slipping.
Traffic on the promenade was lighter than I expected.
You really want to do this the hard way?
I believe this will actually be the easy way. Completely inappropriate, though.
Completely.
Fortunately, you have a reputation for that sort of thing, and I can't be expected to keep you reined in. I did wear dark undergarments, though, so they won't be as visible from below while we are flying.
Wax smiled, then reached under his seat, getting out the package that Renette had sent him. He tucked that under his arm, then pushed open the door.
People underestimate you, Steris.
No.
She stepped out onto the misty sidewalk. He saw she wore shoes that fastened securely.
They simply presume to know me when they do not. Understanding social conventions is not the same as condoning them.
Wax gathered her to him in a close embrace, unholstered vindication, then aimed between three cobblestones at their feet.
Now, how is it that we are to...
Wax grinned as heads popped out of carriages all down the line. He'd have to leave Wayne and Maracy to fend for themselves this way, but that was likely better. Might keep eyes off those two. Wax decreased his weight, oriented himself and Steris at the correct angle to the bullet, and pushed. They shot into the air at a slant, soaring over the coaches in a line. He landed them on one of the skyscraper's decorative outcroppings a few stories up. Steris clung to him with the grip of a cat hanging above an ocean, her eyes wide. Then, cautiously, she released him and stepped up to the edge of the stonework, leaned out, and peered through the misty depths. Lights bobbed below, coaches, street lamps, lanterns held high by footmen. In the mist, most were just bubbles and shadows.
I feel like I'm afloat in a sea of smoke and fog.
The mists twisted and churned as if alive. Eddies and swirls seemed to move against the currents of air, always in motion. Wax opened Renette's package, getting out the length of tightly twined rope inside. He looked upward. Renette's note said she wanted him to experiment with using a tether as he jumped with allomancy, then provide her with feedback.
You were eager to come tonight. It's more than wanting to meet the governor. You're working. I can see it in you.
Wax hefted the rope, which was weighted at one end with a hooked steel spike, getting a feel for what throwing it would be like.
I can tell, you see, because you are fully awake. You are a predator, Waxillium Ladrian.
I hunt predators.
You are one, too.
She looked at him through the translucent mists dancing between them. Her eyes were alight, reflecting the glow from the sea of fog below.
You are like a lion. Most days you're only partially present with me. Lounging, half asleep. You do what you must, you fulfill the needs of the house, but you don't thrive. Then the prey appears. You wake. The burst of speed, the fury and power, the pounding, pulsing rush of the hunt. This is the real you, Waxillium Ladrian.
If what you say is true, then all lawmen are predators.
True lawmen, perhaps. I don't know that I've met another.
She followed his gaze as he looked upward.
So, my question. What do you hunt tonight?
Bleeder will be here.
The murderer? How do you know?
She is going to try to kill the governor again. She'll want to test me, to see if she can get close, judge how I'll react.
You act as if it's personal between the two of you.
I wish it were.
Someone else moves us, lawman.
I wish I knew Bleeder well enough for it to be personal, as that would give me an edge. But she certainly is interested in me, and that means I can't skip this party. Otherwise, she might take it as a sign that she should strike.
Wax finished coiling the rope in one hand, then held it with the spiked end dangling free. He held out his hand, and Steris readily stepped up to him. He searched out a metal line that pointed toward one of the steel girders in the stone under his feet. With so much rock separating them, it wouldn't be as strong an anchor as otherwise. But it was large and solid, so it would work for his purposes. Holding Steris, he pushed off it into the night air. Skyscrapers like this one presented a problem for him, since they tapered as they grew taller. In addition, many of the footholds he used were narrow ledges, which made it hard to get a push directly upward. Those pushes often sent him slightly outward, away from the building, at an angle. Either way, the higher he went, the farther from the wall he got. Usually, he could counter this with his shotgun and his ability to make himself lighter. That wouldn't work while carrying Steris. Renette's rope and spike might. He reached a height where he started to slow, his anchor getting too far to give him further lift. As usual, he'd drifted out some 10 feet from the building. So, as he slowed, he flipped the spiked end toward a balcony and pushed on it. The hooked spike shot between the metal bars of the balcony, but then pulled free. He drifted to a stop, precarious, in danger of falling sideways away from the building. He tried again, and this time got the hook to lock in place. He pulled them inward like a fish reeling itself in. That got them to the balcony. He set Steris down and coiled the rope again, looking upward.
That was well performed.
Too slow.
Oh, dear.
He smiled and gathered her again. This time, as he drew near the halfway point to the party, he launched his hook toward a passing balcony at speed, hooking in place. He continued pushing himself, moving up past the balcony on his right. Then a sharp pull on the rope made him pivot in the air as he flew, and he swung toward the building. Wax hit the side of the building boots first, rope in one hand, the other arm wrapped around Steris. He then dropped them the few feet to the balcony.
Better.
The great liability of a coin shot like himself was that he could only push away from things, never pull toward them. A tether could be useful indeed. He wiggled the hook free. This was awkward. What if he needed to unhook it while flying or fighting? Could Renette make that hook able to unhitch on command somehow? He pushed on the balcony, sending them upward again. Steris dug her fingers into his shoulders. Mists streamed lazily about them. A coin shot grew very comfortable with heights. No matter how far he fell, dropping a single piece of metal and pushing carefully let him land unharmed.
I forget how disorienting this can be.
Wax slowed their ascent.
Close your eyes.
No. This is wonderful.
I don't think I'm ever going to understand that woman.
He could have sworn she was terrified. The next few leaps went well as he got used to the tether.
The rope is way too bulky.
Lugging this around would be a serious pain, and the hook could easily get tangled. If he were using this in a fight, he'd probably have to leave the rope tether behind after the first leap.
Tonight it worked well enough, though.
A moment later, he swung them onto the top floor balcony in a flurry of skirts and mist coat tassels. A small group of partygoers stood there. Wax straightened, letting Steris down. Despite what she'd been through, she quickly composed herself, settling her skirts and pulling back her hair to smooth, straggling locks.
I believe that was an entrance befitting your station.
Alerted the guards, at least.
Wax nodded to the men who stood at the sides of the balcony, watching them. The men were doing their job, which was good to see. A coin shot couldn't enter this party unnoticed. They didn't stop him, however. He was too important to bother. Wax wound up the rope and spike, tying it at his waist within his coat, which made Steris roll her eyes. Then she rested her hand on his arm. Before leaving Ladrian Mansion, she'd coached him with precision on how to walk and stand, her sixth such coaching during their time together. Perhaps that was because he never did it as he was supposed to. Indeed, tonight he took her by the arm in a more familiar way than she'd explained. They were betrothed. Rusts, he could hold her by the arm. Steris eyed him but said nothing as Wax pushed open the balcony doors with an alimentic shove and they entered the party. Standing at the foot of Zobel Tower, Wayne watched Wax and Steris disappear into the mists. He shook his head, then took a ball of gum from the tin in his pocket. He'd gotten himself some of the stuff. It was actually fun to chew. He popped it into his mouth and thought about what a rusted fool his friend was. Obviously, Wax persisted with this whole engagement to Steris mess because he missed Lessie so much. So Wax had chosen a marriage that demanded no emotional investment. That was easy to see as the bottom of your own glass at a pub with watered-down ale. Wayne held out his hand to help Marisie down from their coach.
You look nice. I'm surprised you agreed to wear that.
Wayne glanced down at his sharply tailored suit. Marisie acted amazed that he had a suit, matched by a fancy bowler on his head and a dark green cravat. Why wouldn't he have a costume like this? He had beggar costumes, constable costumes, and old lady costumes. A fellow needed to be able to blend with his surroundings. In the roughs, that meant having some pale brown cowhand's costume. In the city, that meant having a fancy twit costume. The stupid line was so long that aluminum could have rusted in the time it took them to reach the halfway point.
Rusting Wax in his cheating ways.
The man could have at least taken Wayne instead of Steris. Up ahead, oddly, a couple was turned away, forced to trudge back toward their carriage despite all the waiting. What's going on up there? Fancy people like this didn't get turned away from parties, did they? Everyone had an invitation, even if his was forged. It was just like the one he'd given to the old tyrant at the school, though. Well, no telling until they arrived. And this line was still moving slow.
That fella you caught, ever say anything useful?
No. He isn't all there, mentally. We did find what seems to be a hemallergic spike in him, though.
Rusts. You know about that, too?
I got to read the book. Death did give it to me first, and Waxillium let me make a copy. Our captive had a piercing on some skin on his chest. After we removed that, he calmed, but he still won't talk.
Eventually, after 7 crop rotations or so, they reached the front of the line. Marisie presented their invitation. The bouncer here looked it over.
I'm afraid that we've been ordered to deny any nameless invitations not in the possession of people they were sent to. With the attempt on the governor's life, only guests named on our list can be allowed in.
There now. Important people. Don't you see how fancy my cravat is?
Near the door, men in black coats stepped forward, threatening. Rusting government security. Constables, they were real people. Oh, they might bust a man's neck now and then, but they came from the streets, same as anyone. These spooks, though, they barely had any soul to them.
I saved the governor's life today. Surely you won't turn me away.
There's nothing I can do, I'm afraid.
Yeah, something was going on here. Wayne grabbed Marisie's arm, towing her aside.
Let's go, rusting fools.
But...
At the right moment, Wayne tossed up a speed bubble.
Alrighty then, new plan.
You sound excited.
Marisie glanced at the borders of the speed bubble. It was more distinct than usual, as the mist inside the bubble continued to shift and move while that outside hung frozen in the air like gauze.
I'm an excitable type.
Wayne hurried back to the lectern where the bouncer stood. Wayne had managed to catch the lectern in his speed bubble, but not the bouncer. Right fine precision on his part. That little pedestal had a name manifest on it.
I think you gave up too easily on getting in the ordinary way.
Our names are on here, in a column of people specifically to be kept out. Wouldn't have mattered how well you argued.
What?
Marcy shoved up beside him.
Damn, I saved his life, the bastard!
Marcy, you're starting to talk normal-like.
Because of you, bastard.
You saved the governor's life, yeah, but it's probably his security who wants to keep you out, not him. They've got mud on their faces because one of their own went rotten, and you embarrassed them by noticing first.
But that's petty. They're playing with the governor's life.
Men are petty.
Wayne glanced over the lists again, recognizing a name.
Here now, that one will work.
Wayne, you're going to get us into trouble, aren't you?
Only if we get caught. They have two lists. People there to turn away no matter what, and people there to allow. See the notes? Fourth name down, says he sent word he might not come, and there to make certain nobody else uses his invitation.
Wayne, that's Professor Hanlonay's. He's a brilliant mathematician.
From the university?
No, from New Seren. He's been behind some of the discoveries in combustion technology.
From outside the city, so people might not know him.
They will by reputation.
But personally?
He's somewhat reclusive. He often gets invited to things like this, but rarely comes. Wayne, I see that look in your eye. You can't imitate him.
What's the worst that could come of it?
We get caught. We get thrown in prison, prosecuted for conspiracy, embarrass Waxillium.
Wayne strode back to where he'd been standing when he'd sped up time.
Now that is the best damn argument for trying this that anyone could make. Come back so I can drop this speed bubble. After that, we're going to need to find us some weapons.
Marcy paled, joining him.
If you are thinking of sneaking guns in...
Not guns. A different kind of weapon. Math.
So, that Chandra is in here. Somewhere.
Still holding Wax's arm, Steris scanned the party room. The penthouse of Zobel Tower encompassed its entire top floor, with windows ringing the outside. Light from a dozen dim chandeliers played off wine glasses, diamond jewelry, sequins on sleek dresses. The dress style was new. Was he so oblivious to fashion that he had missed such a dramatic shift? Steris wore more traditional attire, a kind of gauzy, draping white dress with a very small bustle and a distinct waist. However, it had sequins lining the collar and cuffs, and was more filmy, lighter than what she normally wore, and actually quite pretty on her. With the sequins, it shared something with these modern gowns. The party attendees moved around several bars and numerous small displays set up on the red-carpeted floor. Wax and Steris passed one, a stand with a glass box enclosing a raw copper nugget as big as a man's head. Light glimmered on its surface. Alimentic metals, dozens of specimens, with plaques talking about where the nugget or vein had been mined. They provoked conversations around the room, clusters of people chatting as light played off the colorful drinks in their fingers.
You're drawing attention. I'm not certain wearing the coat was a wise move.
The mist coat is a symbol. It is a reminder.
She'd talked him out of the hat, but not this.
It makes you look like a ruffian.
It's supposed to. Maybe they'll think twice about lying to me. I don't want to be part of their games.
You are already part of their games, Lord Waxillium.
Which is why I don't like coming to the parties.
Wax held up his hand, cutting her off.
I know. It's important that we be here. Let's go chat with the partygoers you've planned for us to approach.
No.
No?
That is what we commonly do.
Steris gave a specific smile, she practiced different ones, to Lady Mulgrave as they passed.
Tonight's purpose is yours. Let us be about it and find that killer.
Are you certain?
Yes.
She waved to another couple.
It behooves a wife to be interested in, if not involved in, the passions of her spouse.
You don't need to do that, Steris.
Please, I do.
Wax let the argument drop. Truth was, he was pleased. With the possibility that Bleeder was here somewhere, Wax wouldn't be able to relax anyway. So, how to find the creature? More importantly, how would he beat someone who could move in a blur? Unlike Allomancy, which burned at a few standard rates, ferrochemical powers could be used up all at once. Bleeder could drain her metal mines in a single burst of speed and could probably take down dozens of people in an eye blink, maybe even hundreds. And Wax wouldn't be able to do a thing. But perhaps she wouldn't have enough left for that. She couldn't just pop more metal in like an Allomancer and refill her reserves. She'd have to rely on what speed she had been able to store up, and she'd only stolen her spike recently. Killing the people at Winsting's party would have expended a large amount of what she'd theoretically been able to save up over the last few weeks. So he had two options. Kill her before she moved, or somehow get her to waste her ferrochemical reserve without hurting anyone. He stepped up to the bar, ordering drinks, then turned to scan the crowd. It had been 2 decades since he'd been a part of high society, and his 2 years back in Ellendale hadn't yet polished off all the rust. Everyone here had the same counterfeit way about them. They chatted with a studied air of merriment while secretly pursuing their own agendas. There was no better place for a murderer to blend in than this. Drinks in hand, Wax stepped down from the bar and turned on his steel bubble. It wasn't something he'd always been able to do, and he wasn't entirely certain how he did it. Oh, the basic mechanics were obvious. He burned steel, then pushed lightly outward from himself in all directions at once. But how had he learned to exempt metal he himself carried? He still didn't know. It was just something that had happened over time. With the bubble on, his elemental instincts searched out any bits of metal moving quickly toward him and would push on those with increasing force as they drew closer. He was getting better and better at that. Standing and letting Darians shoot at his chest while wearing about 12 inches of padding and armor had helped. He couldn't dodge bullets, but the bubble helped.
What did you just do? My bracelet wants to leap off my arm.
Remove it. If there's an allomantic fight, I don't want you wearing any medals.
Steris raised an eyebrow, but took off the bracelet and dropped it in her handbag. Wax mentally added an exception for it.
I don't know that it will matter. This place is positively teeming with metal. What are you doing with your drink?
Wax looked up. He'd just finished covertly dumping a bit of brown powder into his cup.
I got water. The powder will make it look like I'm drinking brandy. If I can feign drunkenness later, it might give me an edge.
Fascinating.
They moved through the room, passing under a chandelier. The separate bits of crystal, which had wires suspending them, moved subtly away from Wax, like the needle of a compass confronted by a magnet's matching pole. He accidentally knocked a nugget off a pedestal as they passed.
Rusts.
Against his better judgment, he dampened his steel bubble.
Let's find the governor.
Wax nodded. He couldn't shake the feeling that no matter which way he turned, someone had a gun pointed at his back.
Someone else moves us, lawman.
Red on the bricks. Lessie in his arms, already dead. His hands stained with her blood. No, he'd moved past that. He'd grieved. He wouldn't be sucked down into that spiral again. As they continued through the party, a pair of lesser nobles wearing dark colors moved to intercept them. But Wax gave them a glare, which was enough to get them to back off.
Lord Waxillium?
What? You said we were going to the governor.
That doesn't mean you can growl at everyone else.
I didn't growl.
Let me handle it next time.
Steris guided them around a pedestal displaying, oddly, nothing at all. The plaque read, Atium, the Lost Metal. As they neared the governor, who stood holding court near the windows on the north side, a man in a bright yellow bow tie noticed Wax. Great. Lord Stennet. He would want to talk about textile tariffs again. But of course he wouldn't say that, not at first. People never said what they meant around here.
Lord Waxillium, I was just thinking about you. How are your wedding arrangements proceeding? Should I look forward to an invitation soon?
Not too soon. We've only just settled on a priest. What of you? Your engagement is the talk of the city.
Oh, now, about that, Oh, is that Lord... it is. I'm sorry, but I must be going. Bye.
What was that about?
He's been cheating on her. Naturally, the topic makes him uncomfortable.
Nice work. You're very good at this.
I'm proficient at it.
I believe that's what I said.
There is a distinction. In this room, there are true masters of social interaction. I am not one of them. I studied social norms, researched them, and now I execute them. Another woman might have sailed through that conversation and left him happy but distracted. I had to use blunt force, so to speak.
You are a bizarre woman, Steris.
says the only man in the room with guns on his hips, a man who is unconsciously trying to push the earrings out of the ears of every woman we pass. You didn't notice Lady Remen losing her ring into her drink, did you?
Missed that.
Pity. It was entertaining. Here, step this way. We don't want to get into a conversation with Lord Booker's. He is dreadfully boring.
Wax followed her down three steps, passing a display shining with nuggets of tin, alongside pictures of famous tin eyes, including several sketches of the Lord Mistborn, who had been a tin eye before the Catasandra. Funny that Steris would remark on someone being boring.
You're thinking that it is ironic that I would note that someone is a bore, as I myself have a reputation for the same personality flaw.
I would not have phrased it like that.
It's all right. As I have said many times before, I am aware of my reputation. I must embrace my nature. I recognize another bore as you might recognize a master allomancer, as a colleague whose arts I don't particularly wish to sample.
Wax found himself smiling. Steris steered them toward where the governor was speaking with the lord of House Erikel.
As a side note, if you do find the murderer, steer me in her direction. I shall endeavor to fascinate her with details of our house finances. With luck, she'll fall asleep in her drink and drown, and I shall have my first kill.
Steris, that was actually amusing.
She blushed. Then she got a conspiratorial look on her face.
I cheated, if you must know.
Cheated?
I know you enjoy witty conversation, so I prepared earlier, writing myself a list of things I could say that you would find engaging.
You have plans for everything, don't you?
I like to be thorough, though admittedly, sometimes I can be so thorough that I end up needing to plan how to best make my plans. My life ends up feeling like a beautiful ship in dry dock, built with 18 rudders pointing in different directions to be extra certain that a steering mechanism is in place. Yes. That quip was on my list.
Steris, I think this is the most genuine I've ever seen you.
But I'm being fake. I prepared the lines ahead of time. I'm not actually being diverting.
You'd be surprised at how many people do the same thing. Besides, this is you, so it's genuine.
Then I'm always genuine.
I guess so. I just didn't realize it before.
They stepped toward Innate, putting them close enough that the governor would notice them waiting. Nearby, other couples and groups shot them covert looks. As the lord of a major house, Wax outranked most everyone in the room. Old, noble titles were coming to matter less and less, but with Steris's money backing him, he'd be able to dig himself out of many of his debts. That, in turn, had allowed him to avoid foreclosures, and he'd been able to hold out until other investments came through. House Ladrian was again one of the wealthiest in the city. Increasingly, that was more important than a noble pedigree. He found it unfortunate, though not surprising, how often noble birth aligned with economic and political power. The Lord Mistborn's laws, based upon the last emperor's ideal, were supposed to put power into the hands of common men, and yet the same groups just kept on ruling. Wax was one of them. How guilty should he feel?
Already I fear I have made things too easy for men.
Drim, the governor's chief bodyguard and head of security, stepped up to Wax.
I suppose you'll be next. My men at the doors let you keep your guns, I hear.
Let me tell you, Drim, if the governor is in the slightest bit of danger, you want a gun in my hands.
I suppose. A gun doesn't mean much to you anyway, does it? You could kill with the spare change in your pocket.
Or a pair of cufflinks. Or the tacks holding the carpet to the floor.
Too bad about your deputy.
Wayne? What about him?
He's a security threat. Had to turn him away down below.
Oh, all right then.
Drim smiled, obviously feeling he'd won something from the conversation. He backed up to take his place by the wall, watching those who came to speak with the governor.
You're not concerned about Wayne?
Not anymore. I worried he'd find the party so boring he would wander off. Instead, the good man there kindly gave Wayne a challenge.
So you're saying he'll sneak in?
If Wayne isn't in here somewhere already, I'll eat your handbag and try to burn it for allomantic power.
They continued to wait. The governor's current interlocutor, Lady Shayna, was a long-winded blowhard, but after the political and financial support she'd given him, even the governor couldn't turn her away. Wax looked around, wondering where Wayne would be.
Lord Waxilium Ladrian, I've heard about you. You're more handsome than the stories say.
He raised his eyebrows toward the speaker, a tall woman waiting to see the governor. Very tall. She had a few inches on him, at least. With luscious lips and a large chest, she had creamy skin and hair the color of gunpowder, and she was wearing a red dress, missing most of its top half.
I don't believe we've met.
The woman didn't bother to look at Steris, but inspected Wax up and down, then smiled in a mysterious way.
Lord Waxilium, you wear sidearms and a rough-style mist coat to a cocktail party. Bold?
There is nothing bold about doing what one has always done.
You have an interesting reputation. Are the things they say about you true?
Yes.
She pursed her lips, smiling, expecting more. Instead, he met her eyes and waited. She shuffled, moving her cup from one hand to another.
Anyway, I don't want to monopolize all your time.
Wow. And they say I can make people uncomfortable.
You learn the stare early.
Wax returned his attention to the governor. In the back of his mind, he assessed the woman Melan and decided to keep an eye on her. Had that been Bleeder in disguise, trying to feel him out? Or had it been just another foolish partygoer with a bit too much wine in her and an inflated opinion of how men would respond to her?
Rusts, this is going to be tough.
Wayne sauntered about the party, his tiny dining plate stacked with food as high as he could get it. Why did they always use such tiny plates at fancy parties? To keep people from eating too much? Rusts. Rich folk didn't make sense. They gave away the most expensive booze in the city, then worried about people eating all of the little sausages? Wayne was a rebel. He refused to play by their rules. Yes, he did. He quickly laid out a battle plan. The ladies with the little sausages came out from behind the east bar, while the west bar was preparing the salmon crackers, tiny sandwiches to the north, and desserts of various sorts to the south. If he made a round of the penthouse room in exactly 13 minutes, he could hit each station just as the servants were entering with fresh platters. They were starting to give him glares. A fellow knew he was doing his job right when he got those kinds of glares. Marcy stayed nearby, playing the part of Professor Hanlanese's assistant. Wayne scratched at his beard. He didn't like beards, but Marcy said the few Ivanotype pictures of Professor Hanlanese showed him wearing one. Hanlanese was far thicker at the waist than Wayne was, too. That was great. You could hide all kinds of stuff in padding like that.
I still can't believe you had all of this in the carriage.
Marcy leaned in and stole one of his sausages, right off his plate. Outrageous. Wayne scratched his head where he wore a colorful terrace cap, a proud emblem of Hanlanese's lineage.
My dear woman, being a qualified academic depends before anything else upon suitable preparation. I would no sooner leave my home without appropriate equipment for every eventuality than I would work in my lab without proper safety precautions.
It's the voice that truly makes the disguise, you know. How do you do it?
Our accents are clothing for our thoughts, my dear. Without them, everything we say would be stripped bare, and we might as well be screaming at one another. Oh, look, the dessert lady has chocolate pastries again. I do find those irresistible.
Professor Hanlanese?
Wayne froze.
Why, it is you. I didn't believe you'd actually come.
A tall man approached, wearing so much plaid that you could have strung him up on a pole and made a war banner out of him. On one hand, Wayne was pleased. He'd only had Marcy's description of Hanlanese to go on in creating his disguise, so the fact that he fooled someone who had obviously seen the professor's picture was impressive. On the other hand, damn. Wayne handed Marcy his plate, giving her a stern glare that said, "Don't eat these." Then he took the newcomer's hand. That suit's fabric really was something. The mill that made it must have used up an entire year's quota of stripes.
And you are...
I'm Rom Maldor.
The man shook Wayne's hand.
You know, the paper on the Higgins effect?
Yes.
Wayne released the hand and stepped back. He gave a good impression of being nervous around so many people, and it sold better than two-penny drinks the day after Truefest. Indeed, Maldor was perfectly willing to give the supposed recluse plenty of space. That let Wayne speed up time around him and Marcy only.
What in harmony's rest is he talking about?
From her bag, Marcy retrieved the book that she'd purchased at a nearby shop while Wayne was getting into his costume. She soon found the page she wanted.
The Higgins effect has to do with the way a spectral field is influenced by magnets. Here, try this.
She rattled off some gibberish to Wayne, who nodded and dropped the speed bubble.
The Higgins effect is old news. I'm much more interested in the way that a static electric field produces similar results. Why, you should see the work we are near to completing.
But I was going to study that effect myself.
Then you're behind by at least 3 years.
Why didn't you mention this in our letters?
Ah, and reveal my next discovery?
Wayne had never seen a scientist move so quickly. You'd have thought someone was handing out free lab coats in the lobby.
Oh, dear. You realize the chaos this might cause in their field?
Wayne took his plate of food back.
It'll be good for them. It'll stop them from sitting around and thinking so much.
Wayne, they're scientists. Isn't that their job?
Well, if I know. But rusts, if it is, that would explain so much.
Governor Innate finished his conversation and turned toward Wax. Drim, the bodyguard, waved them forward. He didn't like Wax, but from what Wax knew of the man, Drim was solid, loyal, and dependable. He understood that Wax wasn't a threat. Unfortunately, Drim didn't know the threat they were facing. A Chandra. It could be anyone. Wax wouldn't have been so trusting.
Wouldn't I?
Wax shook the governor's hand.
What if the Chandra is Drim? Have I considered that?
That was how Bleeder had gotten in to kill Lord Winsting, after all. She had been wearing the face of someone Winsting's men trusted.
Rusting iron on a hillside. This is going to be very, very hard.
Lord Waxillium, are you well?
I'm sorry, my lord. My thoughts were called away for a moment. How is Lady Innate?
She had a moment of passing nausea and went home to lie down. I will tell her you asked after her.
The governor kissed Steris's hand.
Lady Harms, you look lovely this evening.
And you are ever a gentleman.
Steris gave him a genuine smile. Steris liked the governor, though politically they were opposites. Steris, calculatedly progressive, as she figured would be expected of new money looking to advance, while Innate was conservative. But that sort of thing didn't bother Steris. She liked people whose motives made sense, and she felt Innate's political record was orderly.
I hope Lady Alry will recover soon.
It is an ailment of nerves, more than anything else. She did not react well to what happened today.
You seem to be doing remarkably, all things considered.
The would-be assassin was one of our newer guards and was mentally unhinged. He had terrible aim and likely didn't even actually intend to kill me. Would that the survivor would always send such enemies to me, and often around election season.
Wax cracked a forced smile, then glanced to the side. That woman from before, the pretty one with the large eyes, stood nearby. Who else was suspiciously near?
Bleeder won't be someone I can spot easily.
What is your take on it, Lord Waxillium? What were the man's motives?
He was provoked to the attack. It was a distraction. Someone else killed your brother. They will try again for you.
Nearby, Drim looked up straight, glancing at him.
Curious. But you're known for jumping at shadows, are you not?
Every lawman follows a bum lead on occasion.
I believe you'll find Lord Waxillium to be right far more often than he is wrong, my lord. If he warns of danger, I would listen.
I will.
I want to meet with you so we can discuss important matters. Tomorrow, at the latest. You need to hear what we're dealing with.
I will schedule it.
From Innate, that was a promise. Wax would have his meeting.
Lady Harms, might I ask after your cousin? I have yet to thank her for what she did today, even if the man's aim was off and I would have been safe anyway.
Marcy as well. She should be coming up here tonight.
Look at them. They dress in painted sequins. They drink wine. They laugh and smile and play and dance and eat and quietly kill. All part of Harmony's plan. All actors on a stage. That's what you are too, Waxillium, Ladrian. It's what all men are.
A chill moved over Wax. He was still wearing his earring. Bleeder had found out how to communicate with someone wearing a hemallergic spike. The murderer was in his head. Wayne turned as the sausage lady passed. He intended to reach for another handful. Instead, he got slapped. He blinked. At first, assuming that the servers had finally gotten tired of him outthinking them, but the slapper hadn't been one of them. It was a child. He fixed his stare on the young girl as Marcy hurried back to his side. Why, this child couldn't be more than 15, and she'd slapped him.
You are a monster!
I...
Remingtel Toxel!
Do you think anyone in this party has ever heard that name before?
Well...
No, they haven't. I've asked. They all stand here using my father's incandescent lights, which he toiled for years to create, and nobody knows his name. Do you know why, Mr. Hanlonaise?
I suspect I don't.
Because you stole his designs, and with them, his life. My father died clipless, destitute, and depressed because of men like you. You aren't a scientist, Mr. Hanlonaise, whatever you claim. You're not an inventor. You're a thief.
That part's right.
I'll have the better of you.
The girl stepped up to him and poked him right in the gut, almost where he'd hidden his dueling canes.
I have plans. And unlike my father, I know that this world isn't just about who has the best ideas. It's about the people who can market those ideas. I'm going to find investors and change this city. And when you're crying, destitute and discredited, you remember my father's name and what you did.
She spun on her heel, long, straight blonde hair slapping him in the face, and stalked away.
What the hell was that?
The price of wearing someone else's likeness, I guess.
Her daddy. She said, I killed her daddy?
Yeah. Sounds like Hanlonaise has some dirt in his past.
Hanlonaise. Right. Hanlonaise, the professor.
I've read broadsheet columns by that girl. It's a real shame if it's true those inventions were stolen.
Yeah. Shame.
Wayne eyed the plate of little sausages as it passed, but couldn't find the will to chase it down. The fun was gone for some reason. Instead, he went looking for Wax.
Excuse me.
Both Steris and the governor turned astonished eyes on him as he walked away. A rude move. He didn't let himself care. He stepped out into the center of the room, instinct screaming at him. Guns out! Firefight coming! Find cover! Run! He did none of those things, but he couldn't keep his eye from twitching. With his steel burning, a spray of small, translucent blue lines connected him to nearby sources of metal. He was in the habit of ignoring those. Now, he watched them. Quivering, shifting, the rhythm and pulse of 100 people in a room. Trays for food, jewelry, spectacles, metal parts in the tables and chairs. So much metal that made the framework for the lives of men and women. They were the flesh of civilization, and steel was now its skeleton.
So, you realize what I am?
No. What are you?
Harmony spoke to you. I know that he did.
You're a Kolos.
You dance for Harmony. You bend and move at his direction. You don't care how poor an excuse for a god he is.
Wax wasn't certain. There was no way to be certain, but it seemed that Bleeder couldn't read his mind. The Chondra could only send out thoughts. What was it Harmony had said? That hearing thoughts had come from preservation, but inserting them from ruin. Wax turned slowly about the room, watching those lines. Bleeder wouldn't have any metal on her. People who were metallically aware were more careful about things like that. The governor's guards, for example, half of them carried guns, but the other half only dueling canes.
How do you stand it, Wax? Dwelling among them, like living up to your knees in sewage.
Why did you kill Winsting?
I killed him because he had to die. I killed him because nobody else would.
So you're a hero.
Wax turned about.
She's close by, watching me. Who? Which one?
And if he thought he'd figured it out, did he dare fire first?
The strike of lightning is not a hero. The earthquake is not a hero. These things simply exist.
Wax started walking through the room. Perhaps Bleeder would try to move along with him. He kept his hands to the sides, a coin in each fist. No guns yet. That would provoke a panic.
Why the governor? He is a good man.
There are no good men. Choice is an illusion, lawman. There are those created to be selfish, and there are those created to be selfless. This does not make them good or evil, any more than the ravaging lion is evil when compared to the placid rabbit.
You called them sewage.
Sewage is not evil. That does not make it desirable.
And you? Which are you? Wolf or rabbit?
I am the surgeon.
The woman, the beauty in red, followed him. She tried to be surreptitious about it, walking over to a group to meet them and chat, but she moved parallel to Wax. There was another person following too, a short man in a server's outfit carrying a tray of food. He made his rounds, but the other servers moved clockwise. Wax was going counterclockwise. Were they close enough to hear him speaking? Not with natural ears. Perhaps Bleeder could burn tin, if that was the power she'd chosen for the evening.
You are a surgeon too. They call you Lord, they smile at you, but you aren't one of them. If only you could be truly free. If only...
I follow the law. What do you follow?
The governor is corrupt. He spent years covering for his brother, but in truth he would have done better covering for himself.
Wax looked to the side. He'd circled the room at this point, almost back to where he'd started. That server had followed all the way.
I have much work to do. I need to free everyone in this city. Harmony crushes his palm against society, smothering it. He claims not to interfere, but then moves us like pieces on a board.
So you'll kill the governor? That will somehow free the city?
Yes, it will. But of course I can't kill him yet, Wax. I haven't even murdered your father yet.
Wax felt suddenly cold, but his father was already dead. He spun, hand on his gun, and met the eyes of the server. The man froze, his eyes wide. Then he ran.
Damn!
Wax dashed after and flipped a coin out in front of himself. It spun in the air, but the waiter ducked behind a group of people. Wax gritted his teeth and let the coin drop without pushing on it, instead unslinging Vindication. The waiter ducked behind groups of people, ready to dodge Wax. Fortunately, he, or she, or whatever, wasn't ready for Wayne, who surged out between two plump women with cups of wine and flung himself at the waiter. Both went down in a heap. Wax slowed, raising his gun, taking aim. He couldn't give Bleeder a chance to use Allomancy or Ferrochemy, particularly if he was wrong about her using tin right now. A shot to the head wouldn't kill Akandra, he guessed, but it would slow her down. Wax just had to be certain not to hit Wayne in the wrong... The governor's guards piled on top of Wayne and Bleeder. Wax dashed forward, Vindication up beside his head. He leaped over cowering partygoers, pushing off tacks in the floor to get some height, and came down near the group of struggling guards. Wayne, wearing a false beard, flailed about as five security guards held him.
Let him go! That's my deputy! Where's the other one?
The guards stumbled about, all but one who lay on the floor, bleeding from the gut. Wax snapped his head up, spotting a man in a waiter's outfit pushing his way toward the room's outer wall nearby. Wax leveled Vindication and took aim.
You should know that I was sad about your lover's death. I hated that it was necessary.
Wax's hand froze. Lessie, dead.
Damn it, I'm past that.
Bleeder ducked Wax's bullet, skidding to the ground. The bullet punched a hole in the window above the man's head. Then Bleeder threw a chair at the weakened window. As Wax took aim again, Bleeder leaped through, 20-plus stories in the air. Wax charged toward the window. Wayne joined him, grabbing Wax by the arm.
I'll hold on tightly, mate. Let's go.
Stay.
Wax forced himself to think through his turmoil of emotions.
Watch the governor. This might be a distraction like the attempt earlier.
Wax didn't give Wayne a chance to complain. He shook out of the man's grip, then threw himself into the mists. Falling felt natural to a coin shot. That sudden moment of acceleration, gut lurching, but spirit leaping. The rush of wind, the chill of mist on the skin. He opened his eyes to spinning white upon black, mist dancing about him, inviting, eager. All Allomancers shared a bond with the mists, but the other types never knew the thrill of jumping through them, of nearly becoming one of them. During moments like this, Wax understood the Ascendant Warrior. Vin, they rarely called her by name. Her title, like those of the other preservers, was used to show reverence. The Historica, a section of the Words of Founding, said she had melded with the mists. She had taken them upon herself, becoming their guardian as they became her essence. As the survivor watched over all who struggled, Vin watched over those in the night. Sometimes he felt he could see her form in their patterns. Slight of frame, short hair splayed out as she moved, mist cloak fluttering behind her. It was a fancy, wasn't it? Wax slammed a bullet into the ground and pushed on it to stop his descent. He hit the street in front of the building lobby, going down on one knee. Nearby, some hopefuls still waited to be allowed into the party.
I haven't even murdered your father yet.
Rusts. Could she mean Steris' father, his soon-to-be father-in-law?
Where? Someone fell before me. Where did he go?
There was nobody. Just that.
The man pointed to a smashed chair.
Bleeder might be a coin shot now.
Wax ran toward the motor car, hoping it was her. But she wouldn't need one if that were the case. Maybe she'd chosen the ferrochemical power to change her weight so she could drift down on the wind. Wax launched himself upward, watching the steel lines for movement. In the mists, ordinary vision was of limited use, but Steel Sight's blue lines pierced the mists like arrows. He could easily make out the motor car speeding away, but he didn't know for certain Bleeder was in it. He took a moment to watch the movements of other vehicles nearby. A carriage pulled to a stop one street away. He could tell from the way the lines quivered, those would be the metal fittings on the horse's harness. People on foot walked slowly along Tindwell Promenade. Nothing suspicious. Decision made, he pushed against some street lamps, sending himself after the speeding motor car. He bounded from lamp to lamp, then launched himself over the top of a building as the motor turned a corner. Wax crested the building in a rush of swirling mists, passing only a few feet over the top. Wax landed on the far edge of the rooftop, then leaped down as the motor passed below.
This will not work out as well as you hoped, Bleeder.
Wax increased his weight, then pushed on the motor from above. He didn't crush the person inside. He couldn't be absolutely sure he had the right quarry. His carefully pressed weight did pop the wheels, then squashed the roof down just enough to bend the metal doors in their housings. Even if Bleeder had access to enhanced speed, she wouldn't be getting out through those doors. Wax landed beside the motor car, vindication out and pointed through the window at a confused man wearing a cabbie's coat.
Motor car cabbies? When did that start happening?
He got out! Two streets back! Told me to keep driving! Didn't even let me stop as he jumped!
Wax kept perfectly still, gun right at the cabbie's forehead.
It could be Bleeder. She can change faces.
Please, I...
Damn it! Harmony, is it him?
Wax was returned, a vague sense of uncertainty. Harmony didn't know. Wax lifted his gun away from the frightened driver, trusting his gut.
Where did you let him off?
Tate Street!
Go to the 4th Octant Precinct Station. Wait for me or constables I send. We'll likely have questions for you. Once I'm satisfied, we'll buy you a new motor.
Wax pushed himself into the air to the corner of Tage and Gwillem, which put him at the edge of a maze of industrial alleyways linking warehouses with the docks where canal boats unloaded. Steel Sight on and pushing Bubble up, he crept through the mists, but didn't have much hope. He'd have a devil of a time finding one man alone here in the dark. All Bleeder had to do was pick one place and hide there. Many criminals didn't make the wise choice in this situation, however. It was hard to remain perfectly still, not moving any metal, while an Allomancer prowled about looking for you. Wax persisted, walking down a dark alleyway, checking the rope at his waist, making sure he could unwind it quickly in case Bleeder was a coin shot or a lurcher, and he needed to dump his metals. Soon, the mists filling in behind him made him feel as if he were in an endless corridor, vanishing into nothingness in both directions. Above, as well, only dark, swirling mists. Wax stopped in an empty intersection, silent warehouses like leviathans slumbering in the deep on all four corners, only one of which held a streetlight. He looked about with Steel Sight, waiting, counting heartbeats. Nothing. Either the cabbie had been Bleeder in disguise, or Wax's prey had slipped away. Wax lowered his gun. One of the large warehouse doors fell outward, revealing a dozen men. Wax felt a sweeping wave of relief. He hadn't lost his quarry. He'd simply been led into a trap.
Damn.
Wax leveled vindication and pulled his Sterion from his hip. He pushed on the man in the same movement, which flung him backward toward the cover of a half-finished building. Unfortunately, the man opened fire before he arrived. Wax's steel bubble deflected a number of the shots, bending them away to cut empty air. One, however, clipped him on the arm. Wax's push slammed him against an incomplete wall. He fired a shot into the ground, then pushed on it, backflipping himself over the brick wall and behind cover. Wax dropped a gun and pressed his left hand to the underside of his right upper arm with a flare of pain and blood. As the men on the other side of the wall kept firing, Wax noticed that some of the bullets didn't have blue lines.
Aluminum bullets.
Bleeder was far better funded than Wax had expected.
Why keep firing so rapidly?
Were they trying to bring the wall down with the force of their shots?
No. They're trying to hold my attention so I can be flanked.
Wax grabbed vindication, holding his bleeding arm as he raised it. It hurt, just as several shadows wearing no metal ducked into the other side of the building site. Wax plugged the first one in the head, then dropped the second with a shot to the neck. Three others knelt, raising crossbows. Something pulled one of them into the shadows. Wax took care of the second man, then turned his gun toward the third to find him slumped down, something stuck in his head. A knife?
Wayne?
Wax reloaded Vindication with bloody fingers.
Not exactly.
A tall figure crawled through the mists, moving over a pile of bricks to reach him. As she drew closer, he could make out large eyes, jet hair, and a sleekly elegant gown that was now missing the bottom half below the knees. The woman from the party, the one who had tried flirting with him. Wax flipped Vindication, reloaded, raised it up in a smooth motion, pointing it at the woman's head. The bullets outside stopped pounding the wall.
Oh, please. Why would I save you if I were an enemy?
Because you could be Bleeder. Anyone could.
You're hurt. How bad is that? Because we should really start running right now. They're going to come charging in here shortly.
Damn, not much choice. Trust her and potentially die, or not trust her and almost certainly die.
Come here.
Wax grabbed the woman and pulled her close. He pointed Vindication at the ground.
They have snipers on five roofs waiting for you to push into the mists. Aluminum bullets.
How do you know?
Overheard those fellows with the bows whispering as they moved around to come get you.
Who are you?
Does it matter right now?
No.
Can you run?
Yes, it's not as bad as it looks.
Wax took off, the woman running at his side. The wound hurt like hell, but there was something about the mists. He felt stronger in them. It shouldn't be so. He was no pewter arm, but there it was. In truth, getting shot was bad, but not as bad as people often made it out to be. This shot had gone through the skin and muscle under his arm, making it difficult to raise, but he wouldn't bleed out. Most bullets wouldn't actually stop a man. Psychologically, the panic of being shot did the most harm. The two of them charged out the backside of the building, past the man with a knife in his head. Behind them, a few of the ambushers trying to get into the building took wild shots. The woman ran well, despite being in a gown. Yes, she'd ripped off the bottom half, but she still seemed to run too easily, without seeming to break a sweat or breathe deeply. Blue lines, ahead. Wax grabbed Malon by the arm, yanking her to the side into an alleyway as a group of four men burst out of a cross street leveling guns.
Rusts!
Wax peeked around the corner. This short alleyway ended at a wall. The thugs had him surrounded.
How many men does Bleeder have?
These can't be Bleeder's men. How could she have recruited such an army? In the past, she's always worked on her own.
Wax looked at her sharply. How much did she know about all this?
We're gonna have to fight.
Malon reached to her chest, where her gown exposed considerable cleavage. Waxillium had seen some odd things in his life. He'd visited Kolos camps in the Roughs, even been invited to join their numbers. He'd met and spoken with God himself, and had received a personal gift from Death. That did not prepare him for the sight of a pretty young woman's chest turning nearly transparent, one of the breasts splitting and offering up the hilt of a small handgun. She grabbed it and pulled it out.
So convenient. You can store all sorts of things in those.
Who are you?
She raised and held her gun in two hands.
The father promised you help. I'm it.
A faceless immortal.
You can trust this one.
Harmony's voice was accompanied by a sense of endlessness, a vision like he'd seen before. It was as good a confirmation as he could get that this wasn't Bleeder. Wax narrowed his eyes at the woman anyway.
Wait, I think I know you.
We met once before tonight. I'm charmed, you remember. You want the ones in the back or the front?
At least a dozen chasing them, four ahead. He had to trust someone sometime.
I'll take the ones behind.
Such a gentleman. By the way, technically I'm not supposed to kill people. I think I already broke that rule tonight. If we happen to survive, please don't tell Tensun that I murdered a bunch of people again. It upsets him.
Sure, I can do that.
She grinned, whoever she was.
Say when to go.
Wax peeked around the corner. Dark figures moved in the mist behind them, coming up on their position. If she was right and this wasn't Bleeder, then who? Aluminum bullets. Snipers to watch for his escape. It was his uncle. Somehow Wax had been played.
Oh, Harmony.
If Bleeder and the set were working together. He tossed a bullet casing to the side against the wall to his right and held it in place with a light alimentic push. He flexed his wounded arm, then raised both guns.
Go!
Wax didn't wait to see what Malon did. He pushed against the casing, throwing himself out into the street, churning the mist. Wax increased his weight, then pushed with a sweeping blast of alimentic power. Some weapons were thrown backward and some bullets stopped in the air. Two men's weapons weren't affected by the push. Wax shot them first. They fell, and he didn't give the other men time to go for the aluminum guns. He decreased his weight greatly and pushed against the men behind him, hoping that the shove helped Melan. His push sent him into the middle of the men he was fighting. He landed, kicking one of the aluminum guns away into the mists, then lowered Vindication and drilled a thug in the head just at the ear. Wax dropped the men around him as he spun through the mists. Some came at him with dueling canes, while others fell back with bows. No Allomancers that he'd spotted. In the night, he could finally prove the worth of the mist coat. Men attacked where he had been, the tassels confusing them as they churned the fog. He twisted between two of the thugs, raised a gun to either side, and fired, sending them to the ground. Then he turned and leveled both weapons at the man who had been sneaking up on him.
Both out, I believe.
He pulled the triggers anyway. The terrified man stumbled back, then paused.
He's out! Move! He's defenseless!
Wax dropped the guns as the man charged forward.
Why exactly would they assume that I need guns to be dangerous?
He reached into his coat and undid the rope at his waist. He pulled it free, draping the rope from his fingers. Renette's hook hit the ground. The man in front of him hesitated at the sound, dueling cane held nervously.
This is how it used to be done.
He yanked the rope, whipping the metal end into the air, then pushed the spike at the man's chest, letting the rope move through his fingers to give it more slack. As it hit the man's ribs, Wax yanked the rope back, holding it on a tight leash and spinning the hook through the air as he turned. He pushed again, slamming the metal into the man, raising a bow. Wax twisted and knelt, whipping the rope around. It spun before him in a grand arc, stirring the mist as he gave the rope more slack, then pushed it, slamming the spike hook past one man and into another's chest. Wax yanked the spike hook back, catching the other man on the thigh, tripping him as he came forward with a dueling cane. Wax caught the hook in one hand and turned, pushing the hook forward into the shoulder of an ambusher. Wax ripped it free with a yank, then pushed it directly back into the man's face.
One more.
Wax whirled, pulling the hook back into his hand, searching. The last man scrambled for something on the ground. He looked up, raising one of the fallen aluminum guns.
The Set sends its regards.
A shadow behind him rammed a knife into his back.
Here's a tip, kid. Save the wisecracks until your foe is dead. Like this. See how easy it is.
She kicked the corpse in the face. Wax looked around at the fallen men. He held the rope tightly.
We need to move fast. I think Bleeder is going after Lord Harms.
Damn. You want to try to climb up and go after those sharpshooters?
No time.
Wax pointed down the street.
You go that way. I'll go the other way. If you get out, head back to the Counselor's Cup, a tavern over on Eden Way. I'll meet you there after I go for Lord Harms. If I or someone I send talks to you, first say the words, all yellow pants.
Sure thing.
Good luck.
I'm not the one who needs help, lawman. I'm basically bulletproof.
Melan gave him a kind of mock salute, then took off down the street, charging through the mists. Wax recovered Vindication, but didn't holster her. Instead, he grabbed one of the corpses nearby and lugged it up onto his shoulder, stuffing bullets into his pocket. Then he pulled off his gun belt. He didn't know if those sharpshooters might be metalborn, set to watch for lines of metal in the mists. Just in case, he heaved the corpse overhead and pushed, lobbing it upward through the mists. Then he pushed on his gun belt, sending it flying ahead of him down the street. Finally, he ran, chasing after the gun belt and using Allomancy to knock it up and forward again as it started to fall. Wax couldn't pinpoint the origin of the gunshot. He didn't know if the sharpshooter was trying to hit the corpse, his gun belt, or him. He burst out of the alley, snatched his gun belt off the ground, then leaped, soaring over the walkway, and started falling toward the water of the canal.